Games are very popular in our society right now, especially the kind you play on a video screen, shooting virtual people with virtual guns. There's plenty of criticism of games and their players, the sentiment that people are desensitized to violence through them or that people just waste time playing games. Today's guest is a big believer in games as a force for good. Jane McGonigal designs games and researches them and their effects. The game she's best known for, which can be accessed online, is called Super Better. Her companion book is also called Super Better, subtitled A Revolutionary Approach to Getting Stronger, Happier, Braver, and More Resilient. Jane McGonigal does speak and write extensively about games. Her works include an earlier book, Reality is Broken, Why Games Make Us Better and How They Can Change the World. She's a senior researcher at the Institute for the Future. Jane McGonigal, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And right off the bat, what is the Institute for the Future?
It's a nonprofit organization that teaches people skills of thinking about the future so that you can, instead of just sort of waiting for problems to happen and trying to fix them as they do, you can actually be more prepared and maybe change the future so that it's the world that you want to live in.
When we talk about games, I know it's sort of a fast inclination in our society right now to think about something that involves electronics or handheld devices or whatever. When you talk about games, you're identifying this fairly broadly, aren't you?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. You know, you started off talking about the negative associations with games. You said, you know, we play video games where we shoot things on a screen. We shoot virtual things with virtual guns. And it's really not good to talk about video games in that way. The most widely played video games aren't about shooting anything. You know, Farmville was played by just about a billion people at its peak. You know, games like Candy Crush Saga, which are the most popular now, you know, it's about pattern detection. It's really interesting that we spend so much time talking about such a small subset of games when, if you look at what people are actually playing, well, it's certainly nothing like that, and the kinds of people who are playing are different from our stereotypes. You know, it's, most Americans do play video games regularly, and so we need to change some of our assumptions about that.
But the point I was trying to make, though, is that when you talk about games, you're defining them very broadly. I mean, we're not even just talking necessarily even electronics here, are we?
Well, I mean, I research games. I mostly research digital-based games because that's what most people are playing. But the research literature does also sometimes look at sports or card games or board games. There are benefits to all kinds of games. There just happen to be special benefits to certain kinds of digital games because of the way that they engage our brains differently.
Okay, understood. So the title alone could use some explanation. What does Super Better mean?
Well, Super Better is my term for something that scientists and researchers often refer to as post-traumatic growth, which is related to post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, everybody knows about PTSD and the effects that you can suffer after a trauma. It turns out that many people also, when they're going through a trauma or a really severe challenge like an illness or injury, in addition to, you know, the anxiety and the depression, they also experience some positive changes, and that they can actually, you know, recover from the PTSD and go on to say that they feel like stronger, more resilient, braver versions of themselves. They feel better connected to friends and family. They feel like they have more courage to live a life that is truer to their own goals and values and maybe not what other people expect. And so that's post-traumatic growth, and, you know, I got interested in it when I had a traumatic brain injury that, you know, at first caused PTSD, and I wound up using games as a way to recover and experience post-traumatic growth, and that's where Super Better comes from.
What caused the concussion? I'm not clear about what happened to you.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't often talk about it. This is something actually it's kind of interesting to share with listeners. You know, when somebody's experienced an injury, especially if it was traumatic, talking about the details of it can re-trigger flashbacks, which can actually bring back on symptoms of PTSD. So you'll find often when I give interviews or when I write in my book, I don't talk about the details because it can actually kind of re-kickstart some of the symptoms of PTSD. However, I will tell you, because there is now a method where you can use the video game Tetris to prevent flashbacks if you play it for 10 minutes within 24 hours of experiencing the trauma or talking about it. So I just have to play Tetris for 10 minutes after I tell you that, you know, I just had a silly household accident where I stood up too quickly underneath an open cabinet and I hit my head, which I found out you can do with the force of a professional athlete on a playing field, knock yourself out with that same force for just from standing up underneath an open cabinet. So everybody should close their cabinet doors.
Wow, I've had that happen a few times, and not nearly as badly as you did. So I'm sorry to hear that that's that affected you that profoundly. But so Super Better actually was born as a game that you were doing to come out of this period of your life.
That's right. You know, I mean, my concussion symptoms lasted for over a year, and I had all the physical and cognitive symptoms: the nausea, the vertigo, daily migraines, couldn't get out of bed, had difficulty thinking, couldn't work. I mean, couldn't really have social interactions because it would hurt too much and I couldn't communicate well. So I experienced all of these symptoms along with depression and anxiety, which it turns out many people experience with traumatic brain injury. And it happened to me. And that was when I realized maybe I should try to use the psychology of games to get better.
And the game was born as Jane the Concussion Slayer. We'll learn more about how it evolved into Super Better. The book is called Super Better, a revolutionary approach to getting stronger, happier, braver, and more resilient, powered by the science of games. Jane McGonigal created the game and wrote the book, and she's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk more with Jane and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on the Exchange in a minute 20. On the Jefferson Exchange, on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Jane McGonigal. She has been viewed in her TED Talks in describing games as a force for good something like 10 million times. She's written a book about her game and her approach. It's called, well, the game is called Super Better. The book is called Super Better, a revolutionary approach to getting stronger, happier, braver, and more resilient. Yes, through playing games. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about the research that Jane brings to bear and the theories that she puts forward. 800-838-3760 by phone anywhere in the listening area. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So Jane the Concussion Slayer was the original name for Super Better. And what's the basic premise and object of Super Better?
So it's all about attacking challenges in your everyday life with the same methods and psychological mindset that you attack obstacles in a video game. So there are 7 rules that you follow, everything from collecting and activating power-ups, which in a video game, they're the things that make you stronger, faster. You know, you think Super Mario gets the magic mushroom and suddenly 10 times as tall, runs 10 times as fast. We help you learn how to identify what are the things in your real life right now that can give you that kind of a boost, whether it's energy or positive emotion or willpower. We help you attack bad guys in everyday life the same way you do in a video game. So in a video game, you know, first of all, you don't run from the bad guys, right? You can't run off the screen and avoid them. You have to face them head on, and that's something that we don't always do in real life. We try to avoid them or suppress them. And we also get you to be more flexible in your strategies. You know, when you play a game, you don't just try the same strategy again and again, especially if it's not working, right? You come up with lots of different strategies. You ask other players for ideas. So what if you were to do that in real life? In the Super Better method, we help you come up with 5 different types of strategies for every bad guy you're facing so that you can experiment and see what works best for you. So it's really all about doing the same things, you know, in our real lives that are so effective for staying optimistic and motivated and learning better and being more resilient, all those things that we are in games, bringing those strengths to everyday life.
So the game sets up the parameters, but you have to do the actual goals or the actual task completion within real life.
That's right, yes. I mean, this is not a video game. This is a method for tapping into the ways of thinking you already have. If you've ever played a game, and that includes sports and card games and board games, you already have the capacity to do these things. So it's just a matter of thinking to do them in the real world.
So, for example, the bad guys include the sticky chair. Would you explain what that is?
Yeah, the sticky chair is, you know, when you've been sitting around for a while on your chair, or maybe it's a sticky couch, it's just really hard to get up. And this is bad for all kinds of things. It happens to be bad for physical resilience. If every time you're sitting still for more than a few minutes, your metabolic systems start to shut down, and you start to have negative impacts on the health of your heart, your lungs, your brain, your metabolism. So we try to help you figure out, you know, how to pay attention. Are you in the clutches of the sticky chair, and what should you do to battle it? Something as simple as standing up for taking just 3 steps. And, in fact, I'm going to do that now because I've been sitting talking to you on the phone for a while. So I am now fighting the sticky chair as we speak, which it turns out is a really easy way to make sure that your body is going to be primed to be more resilient to illness or injury, or not even lack of sleep when you're physically engaged, not just sitting around.
I'm totally with you. I can't get away from the microphone, but I did shove the chair about a step away. So we'll do.
You can
this.
Also raise your arms over your head for 5 seconds as high as you can. It has the same impact.
That actually has some surprising impact. I did try a bunch of this stuff and did actually sign on to Super Better yesterday to get some idea of what's going on here. So let's talk about some of the basic theory here, though, because you write yourself that games are famously, perhaps even notoriously, attention-grabbing. And so it sounds like what you're trying to do is channel the energy that we put into games and put that back into real life.
Right. I mean, the first part of the book is about the ordinary games that we play every day and the powerful ways that they help us control our attention. Because if you look at the scientific literature, there are more than 500 peer-reviewed articles that I draw on for this book. You'll see that games help us block anxiety, you know, reduce pain that we're feeling, help us reverse depression, control cravings, all because of how they control our attention. They teach us to focus our mind much in the same way as meditation, actually. If you look at brain scans of people playing video games and people who are experienced meditators, the blood flow patterns are actually very similar, because just like in meditation, when you're focusing on your breath and you're really controlling your attention, the same thing is happening in video games, and both are really skillful, difficult activities. And so now we're starting to see, much as we've now got decades of research on the benefits of meditation for depression, anxiety, and pain, we're now seeing that many more people can get the same benefits from playing games. And, you know, I have a meditation practice, but it's hard. It's hard to do. It seems to be an easier step for most people who already play games to start to use it, you know, more purposely and strategically in that way with a video game.
Jane McGonigal's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the designer of the game Super Better, the author of the book Super Better. Some of the research you cite in here is really fascinating stuff, like burn patience in video games. Tell us about that connection.
Sure. So there's a video game called Snow World that was developed specifically for burn patients. It's this 3D virtual reality game where you can throw snowballs at penguins and you explore ice caves. And burn patients will actually play this while their wounds are being cleaned in the hospital. And that's considered by doctors everywhere to be the single most painful medical procedure. There's nobody in more physical pain than severe burn patients while their wounds are being cleaned. And they're always treated with really powerful medications, the highest and safest doses of things like morphine. But even with that, burn patients report being in excruciating pain 91% of the time. When they play this video game, though, it actually, you can look at fMRI footage of what's going on in their brains while they play the game and their wounds are being treated. All the blood flow in the brain is moving away from the parts of the brain that process pain signals. So pain is just information from your nerves. It goes from your nerves to your brain to say, help, help, I'm in pain. It's a way of getting our attention, so we try to fix it. But it requires blood and cognitive resources. Games are so cognitively absorbing. All the blood flows to the problem-solving regions, the areas associated with learning and concentration and goal achievement. There's literally no cognitive resources left to process pain. You have chosen where to send the blood in your brain. And for that reason, many of the patients have reported in clinical trials that the video game reduces pain more effectively than the morphine. they are able to have no conscious awareness of pain for over 90% of the time. So it's a complete reversal of what they experience. And if that can work for people in the most severe pain, I mean, imagine what it can do for just ordinary people when you learn to control your cognitive resources. And it's really important. It's not distraction, right? It's not that they are feeling pain and distracting themselves from it. They are literally preventing the pain from happening by controlling their attention.
Wow. But once they're done playing the game, does the pain return?
Well, the pain can return, but the important thing with treating burn patients is that the wounds have to be cleaned, right, to prevent infection. And
all right, so it's while the wounds are being cleaned, yes, okay.
Right, and so they found now with these clinical trials, they can actually treat them more aggressively. They can withstand a more aggressive form of treatment and have lower pain medication doses so that there are fewer side effects, so that they can actually get better faster. And it's really by being able to control their pain at that time, they have an overall better, you know, chance to heal faster.
And you mentioned the effects discovered of the game Tetris on people suffering from PTSD. I'm surprised it's not being used more for that purpose.
Yeah, I mean, the third study from Oxford University just came out this summer, and I think that this, you know, you want to see things validated and repeated to make sure they work, especially when they're such surprising ideas like using video games to prevent PTSD. Now, the studies have actually looked at preventing flashbacks and preventing symptoms of PTSD. So the Oxford researchers did not use it to treat people who already had it, although people are experimenting with it now. And the way it works is very similar. You know, a game like Tetris, the puzzle pieces that you're trying to fit together require so much visual attention that the part of your brain that would be flashing back to the trauma is totally engaged with the visual game instead. And many people who play Tetris know if you've been playing for a little while, you walk away from it, the second you close your eyes, you see the ghost of the puzzle pieces falling. You flash back to the game. So researchers figured out that you can actually absorb the brain in that task, which the brain has a tendency to focus on the present if there's a challenging task at hand, because it's more important to do well in the present than to worry about the past. So you give the brain a chance to focus on what it wants to focus on, which is the game now. And then in just 10 minutes of playing, you get enough visual engagement that you will have fewer symptoms of flashbacks and fewer symptoms of PTSD in the weeks that follow.
Jane McGonigal, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the benefits of games, games of all types. She's designed a game called Super Better that uses game sorts of rules to get you to focus on using game attitudes in real life to your benefit. The game and the book are both called Super Better. The book is subtitled A Revolutionary Approach to Getting Stronger, Happier, Braver, and More Resilient. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone throughout the listening area. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. It's interesting, though, to think about the kinds of attributes that come to us from games don't necessarily just come from video games, not just from Tetris or from Snow World, for example, because you also have a story in here about a couple that chose to try to quit smoking together and did puzzles every night, and they had a rather remarkable effect.
Yeah, this works on the same principle as using Tetris to prevent PTSD. So jigsaw puzzles often also require that same intense visual concentration. And if you have a craving for something like junk food or cigarettes or alcohol or even drugs, studies have shown, you can reduce the cravings by focusing on this really visually intense form of engagement. And the reason why your cravings get reduced is that cravings happen to have a very strong visual component. So I'm sure you can relate. If you're really craving something, you're picturing it and you're imagining yourself enjoying it. And the more that vividly that you imagine it, the stronger the craving gets. So, you know, in the book I write about a couple, they wanted to quit smoking before they got married. That was going to be their commitment to each other to lead healthier lives. And they played jigsaw puzzles every night at home. They were able to not smoke at work because they were so engaged, but they would come home and they would have all this free time and downtime and their brains would just start focusing on how much they crave that cigarette. So they were able to use jigsaw puzzles. So it doesn't have to be digital, although because it's so easy to put a game on our phone, I think most people find it more convenient let's say, to do a digital version of the game. But if you're not into digital games, you can use things like jigsaw puzzles. Now, it's important to note, for preventing PTSD and for cravings, not any game works. It has to be the kind of game where you're matching visual patterns. So Candy Crush Saga would work, but Words with Friends would not work. And they've actually tested that. So you have to play for those particular benefits.
Interesting.
You have to play the kind of game that gives you flashbacks.
Okay, so it's the visual pattern thing that really ties up the visual part of your brain and keeps that from engaging other parts, other thoughts, other flashbacks in these cases.
Right, and there are benefits to, you know, if you play Words with Friends, there are still benefits. Those would be more social benefits. You know, we know that when you play a game frequently with somebody, you're more likely to ask them for help or get help from them on a real-life problem, particularly in these games where you can send each other power-ups or, you know, extra moves because you develop this sense of reciprocity. Oh, here's somebody that I'm helping every day by giving them, you know, extra benefits in the game. So basically, if you play a game, there are probably some benefits, and I've tried to collect all of that in the book so that you can play more strategically, make sure you're playing at the right time or in the right way to get most of those benefits.
Well, and then to the pairing up aspect you just mentioned, I mean, people do tend to work pretty well in pairs. There's a real social aspect here that you explore a bit in the book.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that we have found with the game, and by the way, so 500,000 people have played this now. We've collected data from them playing this super better, you know, game that came out of my own concussion. And we found that people who invite at least one person to play the game with them have even better results, less depression, less anxiety, more self-confidence. They feel better understood by friends and family. And it's interesting because it seems to be easier to invite somebody to play a game with you than to just say, oh, I have this huge problem. I'm depressed and I don't know what to do. Inviting someone to play a game with you, it requires less vulnerability on your part because we're all used to doing, hey, play this game with me. And it also really gives the friends or family members that you're inviting a more concrete structure. So, you know, if you're using SuperBetter and you're collecting power-ups, you can tell your friends and family, hey, the way we play this game is I collect power-ups and then I activate them to feel stronger or happier. They now know that what they can do as your ally is find power-ups for you. Or if they see your list of power-ups, they can bring them to you or do them with you. So you're giving friends and family really concrete things they can do. And it turns out that friends and family members who play this game with people who are going through challenges are also less depressed and anxious, because now they have a more concrete way to help somebody that they love.
And people actually get into sync with each other? Is that what you're reporting in the book as well, that they some attributes of their physical nature begin to work together?
Yeah, well, this is something, again, that goes from video games. So, you know, that's why there are two parts of the book. The benefits you get from playing actual video games and then different benefits from the sort of more super better mindful approach. With video games, you do tend to synchronize in really interesting ways with people that you play with if you're playing in the same physical space. So we know that your heart rates will converge so that you're actually, your hearts are beating at the same rhythm. Your breathing rates converge so you're inhaling and exhaling at the same pace. Your facial expressions start to mirror each other. Body language will mirror each other. And if you measure brain activity, you'll see that the same regions of the brain are being stimulated at the same time in the same patterns. And this is really good. It helps explain why we've seen so many studies showing that when you play games with people that you know in everyday life, it improves your relationship, because we know all those kinds of synchronization are associated with improved empathy, feeling like you trust somebody more, feeling like you have more in common, you want to help them, you feel just closer connected. And video games seem to do this more effectively than most forms of interaction, including just having a conversation, going for a walk together, or even playing a board game or card game. And the reason why is that all of these benefits seem to stem from having to get inside the mind of the other player. So whether you're competing with them or collaborating, you're trying to anticipate what they're going to do next so that you can either be crafty and come up with a better strategy and beat them, or so that you can work together to achieve the goal. The more you try to get in someone else's mind, anticipate what they're thinking and feeling so that you can predict what they'll do next, that's what triggers all these forms of synchronization. And there are just more opportunities to do that in a board game than most forms of interaction, I mean, in a video game, than most other forms of interaction, because there are more decisions to make. The action is faster, so it's a more intense form of really getting into someone else's mind.
We'll talk more about the ways to pull the attributes of games and video games in particular into real life and to use them for our benefit. Jan McGonigal is the author of Super Better, the creator of a game by the same name. Super Better is subtitled A Revolutionary Approach to Getting Stronger, Happier, Braver, and More Resilient, powered by the science of games. We'll get more into the science of games and about the attributes of Super Better in particular when we return to the Jefferson Exchange with your phone calls and emails in a minute 25. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about games and how games can actually do good things for us. Today's guest is a big believer in games as a force for good. Jan McGonigal has a PhD. She talks a lot about games and their benefits in TED Talks. They've been viewed like 10 million times on YouTube. Her earlier book is Reality is Broken, Why Games Make Us Better and How They Can Change the World. Her latest book bears the same name as the game she's designed, which tells you to or shows you how to take game skills and transfer them to real life for your benefit. Game and book are both called Super Better, as in not just getting better from what ails you in life, but getting super better. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Jeannie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jane McGonigal.
Hi, thank you. You might have addressed part of my question when you said that people get closer with the video games when you can anticipate what the person's going to do or be crafty or be help each other win. I think the participation is great, and that makes me think about PTSD. I think the part of that when you can feel like you have a little control about your surroundings, that helps me with PTSD. And secondly, what about games like Jeopardy? My neighbors sit outside in the evening and staring at their screens, and I make fun of them. But they do a knowledge thing, like, what is the capital of, and which planet that, you know, and they, three people sit around, and I usually say, who cares, I'm bored. But yet, alone, I love Jeopardy.
Interesting. Thanks for that, Jeannie. Appreciate it. Jane, thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, anytime you're playing a game with other people, you're getting benefits. So whether it's Jeopardy or Call of Duty, that's great. So that's the kind of game that, you know, appeals to them. And also, when you play trivia games like Jeopardy, you can really boost the level of dopamine in the reward pathways of your brain. You get a little boost every time you answer a question. And it doesn't actually matter if you're right or wrong. You get the boost when you share an answer, because your brain is anticipating feedback. Whenever your brain anticipates feedback on something you've tried or you've given an answer, it says, oh, we're going to learn now. We're going to learn if we were right or wrong. And so it increases the dopamine levels in your brain, so you're better able to process feedback. So, you know, if you're watching a show like Jeopardy at home and playing along at home, it's possible that the reason why it feels good is you're getting these little dopamine hits every time you wait to see if the answer you think is the answer is in fact the right answer.
So what research exists, Jane, about the ability of gamers to transfer some of the game skills to real life? And if they are able to do that, do you get the little hit of dopamine that hits your pleasure center, your brain?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's lots of research. There's a whole chapter in the book that looks at the difference between people who get addicted to games and don't bring the benefits of everyday life versus people who seem to be able to keep their gameplay in balance, even if they're playing for 20 hours a week. Those people are able to bring the skills and abilities that they develop in games to everyday life. And I looked at 100 studies to try to figure out what is the difference between people who get addicted and people who really seem to benefit. And it turns out it's not which games you play, and it's not you know, necessarily how long you play. It's really about whether you are able to articulate to yourself or to friends and family how you're getting better when you play. So if you're able to talk about concrete skills you're developing, whether it's you can process more information faster, you can become a more creative problem solver, you communicate more effectively with others when you're playing team games, maybe if it's even just, you know, I can play the same level for 5 days and I'm failing and failing and I never give up. I'm learning how to not give up when things are tough. If you can identify those things, you become more likely to bring those skills and abilities to real life. And the people who get addicted tend to be the people who see games as being completely divorced from reality. They see games as their escape. And so instead of thinking about who am I when I play a game, what skills do I have, how does that relate to my real life, they think that they need to escape to games and avoid their problems. So they will never bring their gameful strengths to their real problems. And therefore, their problems get worse. And then since their coping strategy is to play games when things are bad, they spend more time playing games. It becomes a downward spiral. And that seems to be the number one predictor of who gets addicted, is trying to escape reality. So if you want to make sure you're getting the benefits, you want to help somebody who's struggling with addiction, you need to focus on how does this game make me better and connect that to reality. You know, what problems in my everyday life would being good at the same things I'm good at in the game maybe, you know, help me do a better job of facing them?
Is part of that separation, do you suppose, maybe because of stigma attached to games? I mean, I can imagine you might get a few laughs if you said, I can do this really well in Call of Duty, and therefore I should be able to do this well at work. I can imagine people being reluctant to say those kinds of things, and therefore they would want to keep the games and their lives separate.
Yeah, I mean, it is a stigma, and I'm trying to overturn that stigma, because the more we reinforce it, the worse people are likely to be, you know. But I think it is changing. You know, there are Harvard Business School professors who, you know, if you search online, you'll find that they actually encourage employers to ask during interviews about video games that the candidates play. And, you know, there's a whole book written about why World of Warcraft gameplay is likely to make somebody a more effective employee. I mean, so it's, even though it might, I guess, sound silly to some people to talk about games in connection with real-life strengths, people who've looked at the research absolutely know that this phenomenon exists and that it's a good way to find out your own strengths. It's also a good way to find out the strengths of others.
You mentioned addiction, people who do get addicted to games. Is there a magic number of hours beyond which the game is playing you instead of the other way around?
Yeah, I did a meta-analysis of all the games that look at studies that look at game addiction, and it seems that once you start playing more than 20 hours a week, there are complications. You might start to see some of the negative aspects that we associate with video games, like worse physical health because it's such a sedentary activity, or you might have less intense positive relationships with people who don't play the same games, or you might suffer worse performance at school or at work because you're not putting the time and energy into those goals. And it really, the reason seems to be this kind of opportunity cost problem. There are only so many hours in a week, and once you're hitting over 20 hours a week, it just seems to have too much of an impact. Even though you might be getting more resilient, you know, in all the positive ways, you just can't do it all the time because you'll never have time to bring those strengths to real life if the only thing you're doing in your free time is playing a game. So we do recommend that you stay under 21 hours a week. And if you have a problem like a game addiction, don't take the games away entirely. That can be like taking someone off an antidepressant without tapering. You know, you're ripping away that source of dopamine, which has a powerful antidepressant effect. So do not take a kid's games away entirely. Just start reducing the hours. If it's under 20 hours a week, you're probably not going to see any negative impacts. You're just going to see the positives.
All right. So your second part of the book is a bit more focused on Super Better, the game itself. And it starts off talking about moving from games to gameful. What does gameful mean?
Gameful means bringing those same ways of thinking that come so naturally to us when we play games to real life challenges. You know, even just starting with something as simple as the challenge mindset. When you play a game, even though it's designed for you to fail a lot, and it's designed to be hard, and you know you're not going to be good at it right away, you embrace that opportunity to learn and improve. You focus on all of the ways that you can get better. In real life, when we have a problem or a challenge, we more often think about all the bad things that could happen. We worry about it. We have stress and anxiety. We focus on the obstacle as a kind of threat instead of as an opportunity to get better. So that's the first thing you do when you play Super Better, when you follow the Super Better method, is we help you figure out what do you need to do to see this personal obstacle as a challenge rather than a threat. And there are, you know, quests that you can do to make that more likely to make that transition. And even if the challenge is really bad and will have profound negative consequences, I mean, people can adopt challenge mindsets when they're, you know, civilians living in a war zone, people have been diagnosed with terminal cancer, there are still incredible physical and mental health benefits to focusing on what do I want to achieve, even if I can't control the situation, I can't guarantee a positive outcome, what can I do so that in some way I'm improving a skill or I'm learning, I'm directing my efforts towards getting better.
There's an unnecessary obstacle quest in here. Explain that idea.
Yeah, well, so every game, if you think about the core definition of a game, is really an unnecessary obstacle that you're volunteering to tackle. So you think about golf. The goal of golf is to get a small ball in a small hole. If you were not playing a game, what you would do is you would walk up to the hole and put the ball inside it, right? But because you're playing a game, you want to be challenged. You want to see if you can learn something new or improve a skill. So in golf, you tackle an unnecessary obstacle. You make it harder. You stand really far away from the hole, which is a stupid way to achieve your goal. And you use a club, which makes it even harder. So when you're facing a real-life challenge, sometimes looking for an unnecessary obstacle, something that you don't have to do, that you are choosing to do, because you want to challenge yourself, that's a way to switch from the threat mindset to the challenge mindset. And so, you know, we talk about people in really, you know, bad situations. They've gone through something terrible, and I ask them to think, you know, what's the worst possible thing somebody could do in response to the situation, you know, yourself or somebody else? And people might even say something as serious as, you know, commit suicide. Right, if you're going through really severe trauma. So that becomes the basis for finding your unnecessary obstacle. If that's the worst thing you can do, you know, what's the opposite of it? Well, you can keep living, right? You can get up every day and keep living. And just by framing that now becomes the focus of your goals, that you are positively focused every day. I am waking up and I am living. And that becomes what you've chosen to do. That's your unnecessary obstacle. That's sort of the most extreme version of it. But it really goes to show that you can bring that ability to see, you know what, I'm volunteering for this. It's in my control. It's in my power. And I choose to embrace this challenge.
You've pulled back the curtain on a lot of games right now because you know, never stop to think about, oh, yeah, I guess we could just drop the ball in the hole there, or we could catch the ball the pitcher throws us and throw it to the outfield instead of trying to hit it with a stick. It's pretty amazing.
Terrible way, very inefficient way to achieve your goal.
Absolutely. So in Super Better, if people participate in Super Better, and again, you can do this online, does it keep an actual score? I mean, does it rack up points like any game would?
Yeah, well, we actually measure, the score, it's a resilience score, and we're trying to help you see how you might be improving different aspects of your resilience. So we measure physical resilience, emotional, social, and mental resilience. And so different things you do in the game improve different aspects. So when you connect with an ally, that would improve your social resilience. When you battle a bad guy, it helps your mental resilience. When you activate a power-up, it helps your emotional resilience. And then there are quests that you can do to help your physical resilience. So we do let you see, you know, how engaged are you. Maybe you're doing all of these power-ups, so your emotional resilience is strong, but you haven't battled a bad guy, and so your mental resilience is actually pretty low. And so the point of the scoring system is not just to give you you know, meaningless points so you feel good about, yay, I got a point. The way score works is it goes up and down depending on how engaged you are with different aspects of the game. So your goal is not necessarily to have the highest score, but to make sure that if one area the points are really plummeting quickly, you know that's an area of the game that if you spend a little more time that you're likely to see more benefits.
So in your own process as you're developing the game, recovering from concussion, I mean, how did it help you as you kept your own scorecard there?
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, of course, it wasn't a digital game when I was recovering because I could barely think, let alone program an app. I just used a notebook, which many people do as well. You know, for me, it really started creating opportunities for me to feel optimistic or successful every day, which when you have a traumatic brain injury, even a mild one like mine, all you do is feel like a failure. I can't think clearly. I can't do my work. I can't write back to that email. I can't answer the phone. And this game gave me ways to focus on what can I do instead of all the can'ts. What can I do today to get better? And I stopped suffering. Even though the cognitive symptoms lasted for a year, the depression and anxiety really lifted.
Well, there's a lot to take in the book. The game is called Super Better. The book is called Super Better, A Revolutionary Approach to Getting Stronger, Happier, Braver, and More Resilient. Jane McGonigal wrote it and joined us on The Exchange today. Jane, thank you.
Thank you. This is my pleasure.